you are listening to 94.1 KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So here we are in Fun Drive, but with a really splendiferous, crucial book that we all really absolutely want, which is The Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the men who are destroying life on Earth and what it means for our children. It lays out also a heartening strategy. But first, we say we are all here for a mission, really. The essence of initiation is to feel that we have a mission to contribute to protect as much life as possible, that the sacrament of conscious kinship prevail against the dementors of doom who are mighty and strong. We are in Act 4, on our way to Act 5, may it be. You know, the essence of storytelling is four acts. Act 1 is here we are. Act 2 is away. Act 3 is oops, uh-oh. Act 4 is evil, where the dementors seem to be winning. And Act 5 is the kiss, the redemption, the how it can turn out okay. But we got to know the true horror of Act 4 to magnetize the redemption. And that's what our author is here to do. We go, may a renaissance of sane reverence eclipse the ongoing dystopian death by the dementors of doom. So it is a curious but emphatic delight to welcome back Dick Russell and his crucial pertinent book, Horsemen of the Apocalypse, The Men Who Are Destroying Life on Earth and What It Means for Our Children, an in-depth investigation into the energy moguls most responsible for the climate change crisis facing our civilization. Dick Russell has published 13 books on subjects ranging from natural history. Yes, we hosted him before with his splendiferous book, The Eye of the Whale, which is so great, to the assassination of President Kennedy, and for most of the past 20 years, the primary focus of Dick Russell's magazine writing and personal activism has been the environment, particularly the crisis impacting the world's fisheries and oceans. His website is dickrussell.org. Welcome, Dick Russell.
Thank you so much. Good to be with you today.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, part of our skill set, we want to go into the many horrible things that you delineate that we have to know, because I think as storytellers and effectively influential people, you know, did you know is a crucial thing, because nobody really minds being asked, did you know? So this book is full of that. And, of course, it's perfect now to be investigating collusion, right? Do you hope, in a way, that the investigation and even the symbolic nature of the special prosecutor will go all the way into the oil, collusion that has now taken over democracy?
Well, that would be great. I don't necessarily expect it, although I've suspected for a while that part of the reason that Rex Tillerson of ExxonMobil, who was the CEO before he became Secretary of State, he had a very strong relationship with the Russians himself, and in fact was given the Russian Order of Friendship, I believe it's called, back in 2013 by Putin himself. So he was cutting deals between Exxon and the biggest Russian state-owned oil company to drill in the Arctic, which is increasingly going to be open for drilling as it continues to warm up. So I always wondered about that. It happened a few years ago, and whether there could be a connection between Tillerson becoming Secretary of State and his close relationship, as Trump has, with the Russians.
Well, as you delineate, yes, the Rosneft, the government-owned oil company in Russia, and Igor, I guess, Sechin, the second most potent person in Russia, second to Putin,
right.
And that Obama's sanctions had put a little pause button on that, right? And so the lifting of that leads to this greater collusion. You know, again, it's not that the government investigator will bring it out, but the likes of yourself will, right? It's all related.
Yeah.
And you do mention frequently Jane Meyer's really excellent book, Dark Money, tracking it, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, Jane Meyer's book on the Koch brothers was a brilliant expose, and nobody had ever heard of the Koch brothers really before she did this piece in the New Yorker a few years back, which then led to her book. And the Koch brothers are a major players in my book as well, in terms of, you know, their what their oil and gas business not only does by itself to the country, but how they've funded all of these front groups and done everything they could to persuade people that climate change isn't really happening. So, yeah, I traveled to Kansas, spent some time there talking to the activists that have been opposing the Kochs on various fronts, and finding out that, you know, for some reason, I mean, here are the Koch brothers based in Wichita. You know, and they did everything they could to scuttle wind energy in their state, even though Kansas has one of the best states for wind power in the country. But, you know, ideologically, I guess it was really going to compete with them, but they set out to change the state legislature so that wind energy would no longer be, on the upper, minds of people in Kansas. And, then, of course, you had the Koch brothers also basically installing Mike Pompeo, who had no experience in the intelligence world, to run the CIA. And he was the congressman from their district in Wichita, Kansas, you know, who had been helping them in Congress keep renewable energy out of the way and pushing for oil and gas. So and that was just, you know, a couple of examples. Also, Scott Pruitt, who now runs the EPA. He was very much funded by the Koch brothers when he was the Attorney General of Oklahoma.
Yeah, it's poignant that Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who wrote the great, edited and also wrote the great introduction to your book, Horsemen of the Apocalypse, essential reading, really, for all humans right now, goes through that in a poignant way. Thought, you know, that, oh, Trump might not be that so bad because the Kochs really despise him. But then this, you know, really, really cynical, yes, he goes through Rex Tillerson. We want to introduce all the Dementors of Doom that we all really need to know about. Rex Tillerson, Scott Pruitt. Yeah, great, great biblical quotes from the Book of Revelation run throughout. We can bring them through it and in our unfurling. But yeah, the anti-science campaign. Ryan Zinke again, the Secretary of Interior, Secretary of Energy, Rick Perry. Oh. And Mike Pompeo, as you mentioned, and I think it's Robert Kennedy who says the hijacking of American democracy by oil tycoons is a suicide pact.
Yeah, it is, and it was Bobby's idea. We were working together. I was helping type some of it up on the introduction that he wrote, which is really outstanding. And he suddenly said, "Hey, you know, will you take a look at the Book of Revelations and just see what might apply to today?" So I went through one of his Bibles there in the house, and I said, "Can I mark it up?" He said, "Oh yeah." So I selected some passages that we then together put in the appropriate places, and it was frighteningly real that you know what was written in that book about the end times, which I hope we're not in, but which certainly the apocalyptic forces of from the fossil fuel industry are pushing us toward, you know, were very much in evidence.
Well, I think it's a very good move to engage the biblical. It's like a great ally, Bob Goff, who's a renewable energy dedicated person on Indian reservations. But when he talks to evangelicals, his picture presentation is, we don't want the fuels from hell, oil and coal. We want the fuels from heaven, sun and wind. And it's like, that's so the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah, Bobby says it in the book too. And and he's of course a very religious person himself, you know, he's a practicing Catholic and I think that contrary to what a lot of people think, I mean, a number of evangelicals have realized that we're in a crisis unlike anything civilization and human beings have ever faced, with what climate change is bringing already and certainly going to bring down on us in the future. And so, you know, those who aren't just waiting for to be lifted up on the cloud and awaiting the end times with the rapture, those who really would like to see a better world for our children and grandchildren and future generations are very much on the side of we got to do something about this.
Well, yeah, E.O. Wilson, great, you know, Harvard scientist, gave a talk at the cathedral here in Washington, D.C., and he'd been talking and collaborating a great deal with evangelicals, saying, you know, we disagree, you know, but that's a luxury in the future, but now we have a common task, which they were all in accord with, and even those into rapture were like, I mean, before we rapture, let's save the earth. And E.O. Wilson, he did say, you know, but what scientists want to extract is it will take a spiritual fervor wedded with science again, you know, to pull this thing off. And that's why I think, you know, even Bobby Kennedy, beginning with Isaiah's pretty good. Isaiah, who says, what you have done, you know, speak to the weary a word that will rouse them, which is really, I think, what this book does. You know, it's rousing, it's detailed in its horror, but then you also do have much about, you know, the Rockefellers' divestment, the next generation, you know, the children of the Dementors, and the children's lawsuits, and all of the very positive things that we want to get to. But I think it's important also just to lay out again, so everybody knows, the Rex Tillerson nightmare. Because so much of what you delineate and what we've come to know in your book is conniption fit inducing the anti-education campaigns, and how do you maintain your calm, non-poisoned aplomb diving into all of this?
Oh, I don't know if I do. You know, I mean, I get so outraged sometimes that I just, you know, I'm almost apoplectic. It boggles the mind that you have somebody in there now with this Trump administration that actually doesn't seem to believe in science at all. I mean, the overwhelming majority of scientists in the world, more than 90%, are saying that and so is our military. You know, this is a national security threat, but we're saying that, you know, we got to do something, and we're already pretty much getting to the point of no return. And yet, here they are eliminating climate science from the EPA website, cutting the EPA budget by more than 30%, eliminating science from the NOAA, you know, the National Oceanographic Administration, which studies weather patterns and climate, you know, cutting that budget. And it really is it's mind-boggling, really, that in the face of what we are looking at, there's that much of a denial machine still happening.
Right. No. And I do throughout your book have little post-it notes going, conniption fit inducing, conniption fit inducing, conniption fit inducing.
Oh, good. Yeah. I was hoping that would end.
No, definitely. But it's, again, you know, part of us like to metabolize the conniption fit appropriate outrage into desire. So what do we want? And action, absolutely. Yeah, but one that I have labeled conniption fit inducing is on your page 26, where the American Enterprise Institute, the Heritage Foundation, and the Cato Institute funneled contributions to small havoc-making groups that publish books like The Global Warming Deception, How a Secret Elite Plans to Bankrupt America and Steal Your Freedoms, and how, you know, green environmentalism is a dangerous terrorist hoax. And so again, gotta know. Let me be responsible to the radio station that, that keeps your voice on the air in perpetuity, may it be so. Dedicated listeners, we are in Fund Drive, and we do have a $500 match from Susan in beloved Inverness. We are offering this really great book as a thank you note, a thank you gift, Horsemen of the Apocalypse, The Men Who Are Destroying Life on Earth and What It Means for Our Children by Dick Russell, with a great introduction by David Talbot and also Robert F. Kennedy Jr. That's for a pledge of $100 just to keep us rolling, again, the only non-commercial radio network in America. And we're also offering, because it was so successful last week, Token Women, a 4,000-year history of women and marijuana. It goes very well together. It goes very well together. And for a pledge of $60. And The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World by Robert Hieronymus and Laura Kortner, also goes really well. Again, about the dedicated roots of the Statue of Liberty. So any or all of those things can be yours as a thank you gift by calling 1-800-439-5732 or 1-800-HEY-KPFA or online kpfa.org, because we do have a great dedicated listenership that is certainly is in the Bay Area, but also Los Angeles. Hi there, you guys. Also Alaska, and many shows on the Arctic. Hello, Gwich'in elders up there. We have listeners in Japan, across America. Again, encouraging you to pledge online at kpfa.org, and we will conduct a full radio show. But keeping the lines lit up would be a wonderful thing. So we will aspire to be fascinating, but not so distracting that you can't call. 1-800-439-5732 would be really great. So yeah, so the administration is in fact conniption fit inducing. I mean, Rex Tillerson, yeah, and the Russian collusion and the desire to ravage the Arctic, the petrostate of Exxon, Scott Cruitt, yes, the anti-science campaigner, Ryan Zinke, again, all of us, you know, calling to protect, you know, bears' ears and all that that represents as well. You know, Rick Perry, Mike Pompeo, you know, all of those beings. Are there other dementors of doom you want to put before us now, and then we can go into some aspects of redemption?
Sure. Yeah, there are. I mean, well, one that, you know, what really, I did not intend for this book to be, in a sense, prophetic. I mean, I wrote it before the election. And I didn't expect that Trump was going to become president. But already he had named this guy Harold Hamm, who is a multi-billionaire from Oklahoma, pioneered the fracking of the Bakken shale oil shale field in North Dakota, among others. And Trump had named him, as Romney had actually in 2012, but Trump named him as his energy advisor for the campaign. And I document in the book how Hamm, because he's on the board of the University of Oklahoma, you know, was basically urging them to get rid of this leading geologist, Austin Holland, who was saying that, in fact, the increase in earthquakes in Oklahoma was tied directly to the disposal of this byproduct, this toxic brine from the fracking, hydraulic fracturing, that was pumping all this natural gas out of the ground. And so Hamm didn't want this known, and he was, and the Geological Survey is out of the University of Oklahoma, and there were efforts there to basically bribe, you know, the university president is former Senator David Boren. I mean, Oklahoma is filled with people that you if you start putting two and two together, James Inhofe, who's the chair of the House Science Committee, he's one of the leading climate change deniers in the House. The governor of Oklahoma, Mary Fallon, she's very anti-science and was denying that these earthquakes were happening, too, for a long time. So Hamm, I spent a good bit of time profiling, and I went to Oklahoma. I spent a week there talking to people about Hamm. Of course, he has a company called Continental Resources. He wouldn't talk to me, of course, but he was one that I profiled. And indeed, as I mentioned earlier, he was a big supporter. He was the main campaign contributor to Scott Pruitt to make sure that Pruitt held on as the Attorney General of Oklahoma. And Pruitt's main credential, I mean, for coming into now running the EPA, is that he was out to sabotage that very agency. I mean, he was leading a lawsuit charge by the attorneys general, I think, of 23 states to get rid of the clean power plan that Obama's administration had put in place and that the Trump administration still wants to get rid of, which is aimed at reducing the carbon emissions from our utilities, from our coal, primarily coal plants, but not just, by 2030. And, you know, it doesn't even go far enough. I mean, it does something, and it's a good thing to have happened. And now Trump's administration and Pruitt wants to get rid of that. I mean, Pruitt doesn't even think climate change is real, and Trump has blamed it, has called it a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. So,
yeah,
you know, Ham is one. There's another guy that I profile in the book named Richard Berman, and he's a what I can only call a PR flack. I mean, he's been working for all these companies going all the way back to the tobacco industry days for many, many years, putting out disinformation about what the how harmful first tobacco was and other products, and now climate change disinformation. And so I look at him and his speeches that he's given to in the past to, you know, delineating how, you know, what kinds of means they can do to make sure that the word on climate change stays buried. And his own son, though, which is interesting, David Berman, who didn't talk to me directly, we exchanged emails, but he had come out and said a few years ago, he's a rather prominent musician, or was, with a band called the Silver Jews, and he came out and said that he quit the band, and he said, you know, my biggest problem in life is my father, that I've been at odds with him for years, and I know what he's doing to the planet. And so David Berman was a real example that I cited of how some of the children of these magnates, he was certainly one, are out to actually up against their own, you know, parents and trying to do something different.
Right. You quote him in the book as saying he's the son of a demon.
That's right.
Yeah, and I do. I will go anywhere. And as some audience knows, I went to CPAC several times just to meet the Dementors of Doom, and was curiously the CEO of Petroleum Inc. invited me to go to the banquet with him. Anyway, so I saw all these people, and Scott Walker was there. You know, but there was his teenage son next to him, looking at him with rolled eyes, and I go, oh, his son's going to get him. His son's going to get him. That's good. yeah, and in the sense, but you say also that Berman's son of a demon, didn't want to be interviewed for your book, although you have many important tales to tell, but because it was just too horrible, why do you think?
Yeah, he said he's still wrestling with it, and he plans to write something of his own at some point, I guess, and he just didn't really want to go there. He came out and made these statements, I think it's maybe 5 or 6 years ago now, and he quit the music group he was part of, and I don't think anything has really changed as far as his relationship with his father, but he just didn't want to, you know, actually sit down and talk about it, which was okay. I could understand.
Yeah, but that's where you lead into the children and grandchildren of the destroyers of life. And yes, Richard Berman with his Washington Dementor PR firm, and living in McLean right next to the CIA. And I guess, right, as you say, in his, you know, bazillion squared house, deciding whether to drive the Ferrari or the whatever into the thing. Or the Bentley. Right.
Yeah.
So we do have these horrific, murderous cartoons, you know, cartoons of American murderous vulgarity, so amplified, right? I mean, it's like Trump is the kind of bloviated expansion of everything that's been lurking and now is visible. And I suppose, I mean, do you view it with horror, but also that there's some merit to it being so bloviatingly exposed, that there are moral moments even in Washington?
Well, I think that what it's doing is it's galvanizing people that otherwise would not have been motivated to become more active, and I think that's true, of course, across the board. And now environmentalists are becoming more aware that hey, there's a problem with immigration. We've got to help out there in terms of what Trump is going to try to do. So, you know, it's cutting across lines. It's bringing people together. You've seen this with the massive marches on Washington, the Women's March and the Climate March more recently. I was at the one here in L.A., and, you know, there were thousands of us out there, you know, marching on this Tesoro oil refinery, which is now being bought up by BP and planning this huge expansion. So, you know, I think the silver lining is that people are realizing, wow, you know, that this is about as extreme as it can get, and we've got to get out there and start making our voices heard. And hopefully, at the, if it's not too late, I hope, you know, at the next election cycle, at least, you know, get rid of these guys. And we may, the unfortunate thing is that if we get rid of Trump, we're going to have, which I'm not saying we shouldn't, if Trump gets impeached for his activities, then we're going to see Mike Pence. And Pence is a much subtler evildoer in my view. He was really, I don't know if he was installed by them, but he's been very tight with the Koch brothers of Wichita for a long, long time. They've been big supporters of his. And, you know, he would come in and probably be more palatable in terms of the kinds of things he will not say every day, but equally, if not more dangerous in some ways, because he's a real strong ideologue. And I don't think Trump is. I think Trump's just a loose cannon who will go along with, you know, the big corporate types that he's because he's one of them, and he's put many of them in positions of power, and Pence would take that over too. So, you know, it's both things are happening, but I am encouraged, I must say, by the renewed spirit of activism in the country on many fronts. And it's,
yeah, and and Indivisible rising up, but also, you know, since we are in a against all odds plucky moment, we go, what in nature likes against all odds? And it is, you know, primary dedication to the trickster that likes against all odds and the desirable story. So it's like, no, take Pence down with you, and also Scott Walker, the whole thing, and certainly the Congress in 2018, going all of it gone, because it is, you know, I don't know if you know the still incredibly valid movie 7 Days in May. Do you remember that movie?
Oh yeah, I sure do.
Yeah. Well, remember, there's a crucial moment, right? A moral moment where the up to no good coup plotters, some of them they go can't go further. Can't do it, you know. And I think, you know, it's like the atmosphere is so saturated with lies, you know, like water saturated with salt or sugar. You just add one more little grain and it all falls out.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we want to lean, you know, because you are proffering to us the Dementors in detail, which I cannot stress enough. Really, everybody, this book wants to be in every library. Wants it to counteract, we'll get to the education campaign. And then also the heartening, the invitational story to sanity. Come on over here as the swindle becomes increasingly apparent. And your book is an antidote to swindle. And so as the people who voted for Trump and who were hoodwinked and swindled by all these guys and citizens of Oklahoma, you know, we want the story of sane reverence. And you do go into that, you know, the children of the Dementors who are all into hemp and many things that I've got so many post-it notes in your book. But you'll have to find those for me. But yes, that extended invitation to sanity. So it's neck and neck, right? The Dementors of Doom and the death of the planet, and then the rise of a truly reverent a culture, a renaissance of reverent ingenuity. Maybe we should go into your great, okay, there's the Dementors, right? But then the Rockefeller family's revolt against ExxonMobil, and Senator Jay Rockefeller, and where that starts in October of 2006 in West Virginia. Do you want to guide us through a little bit of that?
Yeah, well, it really started with one of David Rockefeller's daughters, Neva Rockefeller Goodwin, who back in 2004 began to question, you know, they're still a major shareholder in Exxon. Exxon, of course, was Standard Oil before, which was started by the Rockefeller family, and then, you know, little by little, more and more of the family have gotten involved, and Jay Rockefeller, who's a senator, has you know, challenged Tillerson, among others, you know, publicly in congressional hearings. Like, I don't think they knew it. He knew at that point that ExxonMobil had under Tillerson and his predecessor Lee Raymond had been covering up what their own scientists had been studying and alerting the company about for 30 years, which was way back in the 80s and early 80s and even late 70s. Exxon was studying the effects of the changing climate and coming to, you know, the bosses knew that this was an imminent threat to civilization, although, you know, at the same time, I think, unbelievably hypocritically, or if that's even the word, they were ready to capitalize on, like, the melting of the Arctic that opened up new avenues for their drilling to happen that couldn't have existed before. So they were covering up, they patented a lot of alternative energy, fuel cells and so on, that they were burying basically in favor of fossil fuels. So this cover up had been going on for years, and it finally was started to come to light a little over a year ago through, a study by Columbia University and Inside Climate News and revealed that a lot of these memos that they dug out that showed that this had been going on. So, at the same time, though, the Rockefeller family has gotten more and more empowered to push for a change in shareholder resolutions. And also, I profiled one of the young Rockefeller heirs, grandson of the late David Rockefeller, died just recently, whose mother, Abby, is also a very strong, long-time political activist on the progressive side of things, and is started the largest organic dairy in the United States on the Rockefeller estate in upstate New York. And Chris Lindstrom, the grandson, gotten very involved in bioenergy, and first in Jamaica, and now is involved in a large hemp project that all be sustainable. You know, they can use techniques of carbon farming that will keep carbon in the soil. That is very encouraging that there are folks like this out there that are really looking to have a different world. And there's an organization I also profiled called Nexus, which Chris Lindstrom is part of. And it's an interesting group. You know, it's the children of inherited wealth, basically, the millennials. And 500 of them, I went to a conference 2 summers ago, but they come together every summer at the United Nations and talk about what they can do to invest their money in different ways, to come up with alternative technologies. And so there's some hopeful signs on those fronts.
Yeah, and I just want to extract a little bit from your book on this too. And yes, they're talking to their granddad, saying creating an environment of comfort and leisure which feels to me, says one, a kind of anesthetic to what's actually happening. And I love Ally James Hillman saying the opposite of aesthetic is anesthetic, right? So
right.
You know, we have a living sense of beauty and design, or we're anesthetized, and we want the aesthetic of democracy. But you say that Lindstrom says going a few steps beyond just investing in do-gooder companies, how can we invest in companies that actually start moving resources into the transformation of the system itself?
Right.
We have the technology to create renewable fuels that have been suppressed by the fossil fuel industry. And he goes into the entrenched status quo of Dementors and all of that. But yeah, as you say, that there was an ambitious venture to turn a massive landfill in Kingston, Jamaica, into a waste-to-energy biomass, which was the investors backed out. But it's back on, right? It's a back on as a possibility.
I don't know where that stands right now, but I know that Chris is very involved in this new very large hemp project in New York.
Yeah.
So he's still in there pitching and doing whatever he can, and I've got a lot of admiration for him.
Well, you do write that, Lindstrom speaks of hemp, and then he's again eyeing Jamaica, where a young investor he met at Nexus is interested in converting the sugarcane-based economy to growing hemp. You're there.
There we go.
Yeah, there we go. It's a little known fact. You write, you quote him, that industrial hemp sequesters 4 times the carbon of planting trees. You can also grow hemp in poor soil and enhance the fertility in areas where other crops won't grow. And it's a hardy plant that in theory doesn't require any pesticides. So thinking about areas that are experiencing desertification and other side effects of climate change, planting hemp could transform economically disadvantaged countries. Right. And then back to Jamaica. That we've been brought to the, I like you quoting him here, going, we've been brought to this crisis as a sort of evolutionary catalyst, ultimately, I think that the shift is moving from a world rooted in separation and fear to a world rooted in the awareness of the connectivity of life.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what we need. And I think, you know, people toss around the term New Age, and then it's become almost a cliche. But I really do feel like we're at a, you know, at a huge turning point, and it's we're at a precipice, and also a turning point where, if we can strive for and find more of that connectivity and move away from just the tremendously, you know, the dominated the material world that is now dominated by a corporate oligarchy running this country and therefore much of the world as well, you know, we're at a major turning point where, you know, who's going to, quote, win? I don't know if it's even winners and losers. It's just we're all going to be losers, including them, unless more, you know, mutual consent agreement working together happens among people, a real sense of community that's been missing in this country since the 1960s in any kind of way that where people were really coming together. But I think we are seeing it start to manifest again, and that's a very positive sign.
Absolutely. And again, to keep us rolling, Pacifica and KPFA, where we can hear voices of sane reverence exhorting us on, and where we can gather information so that we can be effective, influential storytellers. Did you know? We are offering our wonderful guest, Dick Russell's book, Horsemen of the Apocalypse, The Men Who Are Destroying Life on Earth and What It Means for Our Children, for a pledge of $100. It's a thank you gift, and also Token Women, A 4,000-Year History of Women in Marijuana by Nola Evangelista for a pledge of $60, and The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World, for a pledge of $90. But right now we're really focusing on Horsemen of the Apocalypse that you can have by calling 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-HEY-KPFA, or pledging online at kpfa.org. So I also, I mean, there's you're also reminding us, you know, of crucial things. I do love the thing. I have it underlined here, but maybe you can tell it better. You know, in 2013, after two men blocked a ship from the unloading of 40,000 tons of coal at a power plant in Brayton Point, Massachusetts, they were initially charged on several counts, including disturbing the peace and conspiracy. And the defendants, Jay O'Hara and Ken Ward, argued that they had no choice given the imminent threat posed by climate change. I can read the rest of the paragraph, or you can take over there about what happened, right?
Let's see. I'm thinking of this lawsuit of our. Well, why don't you finish that paragraph, and then I have.
I'll finish. Yeah. Right. Well, I'll do these. I'll do these two, and then hand it back to the lawsuit by the guardians of the future, the children, which is so important. But. So on the day their trial was to begin, the district attorney of Bristol County reduced the charges to a small fine, explaining, "Climate change is one of the gravest crises our planet has ever faced. In my humble opinion, the political leadership on this issue has been gravely lacking." The DA then met with the accused and vowed to take part in a planned People's Climate March, which was the next day.
That's right.
And we go, that's really great. You know, it's also, again, a crucial thing on International Youth Day. The most important lawsuit on the planet right now was filed in the U.S. District Court of Eugene, Oregon. Yay, good-hearted district courts. 21 young plaintiffs ranging in age from 8 to 19. Oh, this is what you were going to say. The Guardians for Future Generations. Let me hand it to you. There you go.
Yeah, well, it's a very, very interesting lawsuit, which has been called by climate experts like Bill McKibben and James Hansen, the scientist, you know, the most important one on the planet as far as our future goes. And, yeah, it's these 21 kids from all over the country who've come together with some very good lawyers to say that their future is being jeopardized, their right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness by the government's failure, federal government's failure to act quickly enough, and, of course, by these big companies that are just doing business as usual. And it's the suit was filed a couple of years ago, and it's really progressed where not only are the judges sympathetic, like. But, you know, they're allowing this to move forward, and they are disallowing the Exxons of the world from getting this suit stopped as something, quote, frivolous. And it's now spreading to other states. I think that these kind of suits are springing up all over the country, including in Massachusetts, and it's being led by some very charismatic young people. There's a young guy named Martinez. I can't pronounce his first name. It's an Aztec name, but the shortening of it would be Shu, but then Martinez is his last name, and he's from a reservation in the Southwest. He's a 16-year-old hip-hop artist who's just devoting himself to getting the word out about climate change. A very, very charismatic young fellow. He's going to be coming to L.A., I believe, for this Green Fest that I'll be moderating a youth panel in September with he and some other young people. And, you know, I mean, these are the people the young people are going to be the ones that are going to suffer. And right now, I mean, the figures that are coming out is that by 2030, this is worldwide, there are going to be 25 million more malnourished children and 100 million more facing food insecurity by the fact that the climate's changing so fast. 150 to 200 million kids displaced. And, you know, we're talking about things like children are the most vulnerable to heat of anybody. So if the temperatures are going up, and we've seen 16 of the past 17 years setting records for this, then, you know, kids are going to be the most affected, and then you're going to have viruses moving to different locations, like the Zika virus that was so talked about last summer, and not to mention all the, you know, billion-some people that are going to be at risk from rising sea levels and floods. So it's a really scary future that we're looking at, and thank goodness that an increasing number of young people are spreading the word and getting out there to make their voices heard about what's coming unless we do something and fast.
Right. Absolutely. Towards the end of the book, you do say the Children's Crusade, and as you just mentioned, our Children's Trust is dedicated to federal lawsuits branching out to help kids file climate cases in all 50 states. And again, we love the defiant ingenuity. Again, our Children's Trust lawyers delivered an ultimatum. This is you. I'm quoting to the federal government following media reports about a takedown of information on the EPA's climate change website. That's our information that we paid for. They stated the Justice Department was, quote, required by law to preserve all documents, including electronically stored information that could prove relevant to the youth plaintiff's case. Destroying evidence is illegal. And then you bring up the graduate student at Eastern Michigan University, John Rosa, who took his matters into his own hands, right? He's saving 30,000 files, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He is, and increasingly you're seeing action at the local level, I think, in ways that are happening to a much greater extent all over the country. I mean, here, the city of Chicago, I like this. This happened just recently. Here you had all this climate data that was deleted by Trump's EPA, and so Rahm Emanuel put on the city of Chicago's website, took that data and put it up to make it available. And you know, and cities all over the country are pledging to go 100% renewable. The lawmakers in Atlanta recently voted to power the city completely with clean energy sources by 2035. That's still a ways down the line, but at least they're moving in that direction. And 27 other cities have made that kind of pledge. So, you know, there is huge public momentum for change, and the fact that we're not seeing it, obviously, with this administration, I think goes against the grain of what most Americans, the majority of Americans, really want to see.
Absolutely. And before I reluctantly let you go, and we will revisit this also when we're not in Fund Drive, but I will, you know, pledge if you want to give us your book ends with a rousing clarion call. Do you want to sally forth an exhortational, you know, invitation to sane people to go first to pledge to KPFA and get this book as a thank you for a pledge of $100 by calling 1-800-439-5732. But yes, is there any, you know, well, your last paragraph is good, but anyway, you want to go, you know, woof woof?
Well, yeah, I mean, let me read the last paragraph because I'm
yeah,
pretty
do.
Proud of
yeah.
Fortunately, for the future of life on the planet, there's another type of human activity at work today. And it's growing stronger by the day, in the streets, in classrooms, in courtrooms, in government offices, and even in the luxurious homes where the families of energy moguls live, and where the recognition is growing among the children and grandchildren of these men that their family wealth cannot entirely protect them from the furies of nature. This type of human activity in service of life must continue to grow. It's our only hope.
Absolutely. So I want to thank you for this great book, and also for the book where I hosted you before, that I took with me to San Ignacio Lagoon, The Eye of the Whale, Epic Passage from Baja to Siberia on the Gray Whale, and part of our kin. I love the range of your dedication, which is really a dedication to sane reverence and to all of our relations on this planet, including the special shout-out to the gray whales, yeah.
Well, the gray whales are amazing, and I think they've got a message for us, you know. I mean, they began coming up to human beings in that lagoon back in 1975, and they've been doing so ever since, introducing their children to us and giving us an awesome, beyond awesome experience, life-changing, really, for many. And they're saying, you know,
right,
hey, we share this planet. This is our ocean. We'll be, you know, you be part of us, we're part of you, and it's just a beautiful thing. So there's a lot of beauty left. It's just we got to fight to preserve it.
Right. And then again, one more delay of letting you go, and then I really will be a responsible pitcher, oh, beautiful KPFA listeners. But part of what I extracted from San Ignacio Lagoon and Pancho Mayoral and all is when the president of Mexico had approved a plant of Mitsubishi's, you know, salt manufacturing plant that would have destroyed this beautiful lagoon where this extraordinary kinship takes place, in which the gray whales, even the hardest of scientists, say they've forgiven the humans. So the fisherman said, let us take you out in the boat, O President of Mexico, with your wife and your kid. And Pancho Mayoral said, the whales knew what they had to do. He said, yeah, they'd never been so beguiling. You know, and the President of Mexico's wife and child were just weeping with tears of kinship, as you do, because it's so moving as these great beings come up and go, hello, and here's my kid, and hello, hello. And the President of Mexico's heart was softened, and he canceled the bad plans. And so I like to take the pitch from the gray whales, who suffered so much at humans, and yet their strategy is to just melt the heart of the oppressors, right?
Absolutely. And that decision was made by President Zedillo of Mexico only a few days, and to everyone's shock, he suddenly said, we're canceling this project. And it only came out a little bit later why, you know, because his family on board that boat had been so deeply, deeply moved at the heart level by these magnificent animals who were almost hunted to extinction in that same place a little more than 100 years before. So,
exactly. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Dick Russell. And I hope to host you again in your many dedicated great works. And this is not going away. We need this book so much. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. Great to talk with you today.
That's great. All right, that is our great ally, Dick Russell. The book, Horsemen of the Apocalypse, The Men Who Are Destroying Life on Earth and What It Means for Our Children. And, of course, it is a rousing call. It's a rousing call to all of us. This is a primary thank you gift for this hour that we're offering for a pledge of $100 by calling 1-800-439-5732. That's 1-800-HEY-KPFA. We do have a $500 match from Susan in beloved Inverness. Hello, Inverness. Hello, Inverness. Hello, Western Marin. Hello, everybody. And then, you know, again, the things that go very well with it, too. We're offering Token Women, a 4,000-year history of women in marijuana by Nova Evangelista. You can just open it up at random and go, really, Louisa May Alcott? No kidding. Maud Gonne, Yeats's lover. Thank you for the dream drug, she says. Again, because we are here dedicated to all of our relations, flora and fauna on this earth. That's why Pacifica, the goddess of peace, is so crucial to us now. We love that the image for Pacifica's son, when Pacifica was born in April of 1949, is a woman bursting with gifts more than she can hold. And we go, yes, because it's all of us. It's a place where we gather. So we're offering Token Women, a 4,000-year history of women in marijuana by Nola Evangelista, for a pledge of $60. So that's our thank you gift to you. We're also offering just a fabulous book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World by Robert Hieronymus and Laura Kortner. Again, really fantastic, and these are all, you can have any or all of these. You know, Elaine Pagels writes about The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, ranges through history, biology, mythology, and politics to investigate the meaning and the power of the Statue of Liberty. Enjoyable to read, stimulating, and inspiring. Elaine Pagels, an actual grown-up professor of religion at Princeton University, author of the Gnostic Gospels. So again, you can have that as a thank you gift for pledging $90. We love that. Rhianne Eisler writes about this book, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty. The book is an eye-opener. Much of our history has been edited out of what we've been taught, giving us a distorted view not only of our past but of the possibilities for our future. By revealing how the power to give and nurture life, symbolized by female figures, inspired many of our democratic ideals, this wonderful book enlightens and empowers us at this critical time when we urgently need new ways of thinking about the world. Thank you, Rhianne Eisler. So again, The Secret Life of Lady Liberty, Goddess in the New World, by wonderful radio allies Robert Hieronymus and Laura Kortner, is yours for a pledge of $90. Of course, any amount, no amount too small or too large, is absolutely welcome. It's a great time to dedicate to this place that we gather, the Visionary Activist Show, going on 20 and a half years. There we go, coming to you, you know, sometimes from the KPFA studios when I'm out there toing and froing across the country, often from Washington, D.C., that we wed, you know, literally and symbolically, the intelligence of all beings and the, you know, the quality of California, you know, with the secret goodness, it is there somewhere in Washington, D.C. as well. We want to do that. So it is a magnetizing exhortation. This book also, rounding back to the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the men who are destroying life on Earth and what it means for our children, is essential for all of us to be dedicated, influential at this time of dire beauty, because it just takes you through. Many of us know many things about Rex Tillerson and the conniption fit inducing, you know, lies that American public has been subject to for so long about the energy industry. So that is, you know, important, but it's also, again, you know, rousing in terms of what we can do and how we can be antidotes for the dementors. And that's why, again, you know, Pacifica, KPFA, Visionary Activist Show, is eager to magnetize your pledge. So again, Horsemen of the Apocalypse, The Men Who Are Destroying Life on Earth and What It Means for Our Children by Dick Russell, with a really great introduction by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. Let me find parts of it here too. Again, where we can use the Book of Revelations, often abused. Here it's fully engaged and used in a really good way. So there's that, and the book is dedicated to the children who will inherit the earth. Absolutely. So, you know, we're looking at heartening things, but I love when he introduces, when Robert F. Kennedy Jr. introduces Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. He uses Revelation 6:8, "And I looked, and behold, a pale horse, and his name that sat on him was Death, and hell followed with him, and power was given unto them over the fourth part of the earth to kill with sword, and with hunger, and with death, and with the beasts of the earth." And we go, yeah, well, that is true there. So again, you know, the Book of Revelations, you know, woven throughout, it's useful. We want to expand our range of being, you know, influential and magnetizing to discourage the bad and encourage the good. You know, no, not that, over here. And I do think for Pacifica, for each one of us listening, for KPFA, for the Visionary Activist Show, this is such a crucial Kairos moment, a tipping point moment where everything that everyone does, thinks, feels, pledges, you know, we're always voting for reality in myriad ways, including where we spend our money and what we donate to. It is so crucial right now, because as the razzle-dazzle swindle becomes increasingly apparent, and let us be agents of that, you know, there's a whole bunch of people who want a guiding story. It's no... or it is completely relevant that in my playing at the Republican convention that a number of the delegates, you know, could not tell the difference when I said, here's quotes from Daesh, incorrectly known as ISIS, and here's quotes from Trump. You tell me which is which. You can't tell the difference because they're all the toxic mimic of an initiatory story. Come and you will be listened to and we will destroy the world in order to recreate it. Trump is Daesh, or Trump, what possesses Trump, is Daesh. You know, there's always been these forces of dementors, you know, again, destroying the past and destroying what is good, but never with the incredible technology of modern destruction. And that's why things are so dire. And as Revelation, Bobby Kennedy Jr. quotes Revelation, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich, for thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived, right? Let's be antidotes to that. So it's really useful. Again, pledge, get multiple copies, buy the book anyway. But certainly for our purposes right now, it is a wonderful thank you gift that is completely pertinent to our dedication to be agents of sane reverence. So that's Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the men who are destroying life on earth, and the women. Let's not forget Rebecca Mercer and Robert and Rebecca Mercer, who so cynically, you know, exploited the resentment against the elites by themselves, the elites. But they did it on purpose. And so there's the Mercers, you know, so we get to call the Trumpelstiltskins the Mercerinaries, you know. So, yes, the men and women who are destroying life on earth and what it means for our children, by Dick Russell, with a really great introduction by Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and also David Talbot. That's for a pledge of $100. And we do have a $500 match. So that would be really, really great. And that's by calling 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732, or 1-800-HEY-KPFA, or donating online at www.kpfa.org. That's for all who listen telepathically across the nation. And really, we do have listeners all over the world. Hello. Hello there. Hi there. It's a great time to step up. So we do love that. So in addition, you know, we're offering Token Women, which is pretty darn fun, a 4,000-year history of women in marijuana, and that is for a pledge of $60 by calling 1-800-439-5732, 1-800-439-5732. And that's Helena P. Blavatsky. There we go. People used to compare me to her, but I don't think so. But anyway, Helena P. Blavatsky going, hashish multiplies one's life a thousandfold. I think these things go pretty well together. We want the sacraments of kinship. You know, sacraments of kinship are restored by diving deeply into Act 4, where the Dementors appear to be winning. But Act 4, fully explored, wants to magnetize Act 5. You know, absolutely. And, you know, and so Token Women really goes pretty well, these sacraments of kinship, and to the extensive, you know, dedicated cannabis community out there that we often host on this show, again, as agents of sane reverence. And Stella Coyote, my coyote, is doing pretty good being on medical cannabis when she was given a death sentence, so it's good for animals, too. Again, all of these that restore conscious kinship. It really is as though right now, you know, the backstage gods go, humans, God, we're going to have to either kill them or heal them. Let's try healing them first. You know, let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available for fresh expression. That's part of the dedication in each one of our hearts and on this show, the Visionary Activist Show, and in all the gifts that we are offering as thank you gifts for pledging, the incredible dedication of Dick Russell, and just as a tout, yes, his Eye of the Whale, his incredible kinship with the gray whales. This is a richly cultivated and dedicated author, completely wonderful. You can feel that dedication in every page. May the dedication of good-hearted people increase our dedication, and may our internal dedication magnetize outward opportunity for doing good. And that's why this time right now, so crucial, and that's why we're inviting you to call 1-800-439-5732 to pledge for earth, to pledge for flora, fauna, to pledge for sane reverence. And as thank you gifts, we're offering completely relevant thank you gifts. Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the men who are destroying life on earth, gotta know. And also the wonderful goodness that is happening, the change of heart, the change of mind. It's what the whales of San Ignacio Lagoon did for the president of Mexico. They opened his heart. That's what the children of many of the Dementors are doing. God's love, the Rockefeller families changing, divesting the $4 billion, into energy renewal, into hemp, into those things. Again, we are making common cause with all sane, reverent people. So eager, again, we have a $500 match. I think that's still there. Can't quite completely tell. Please to call 1-800-439-5732 or donate online, kpfa.org. You can have Token Women, 4,000-year history of women and marijuana by Nola Evangelista. Charming, charming, wonderful. Just flip it open at any point. And also, you can actually flip open the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, the men who are destroying life on Earth, pretty much, almost kind of anywhere. My copy is so underlined that it also delineates, cooperative ventures to revive North American hemp industry, starting in Colorado, also moving on to Jamaica. Thank you all so much, team. Again, 1-800-439-5732. I'm Caroline Casey, CoyoteNetworkNews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you. Oh, yeah.